Okay, good afternoon, Gavach Shavua Tov. Welcome back to Parsha Perspectives for today. Thank you for your flexibility. Baruch Hashem, traveling again for a simcha. Always good for a simcha. So unable to give the shir on Tuesday morning. Grateful that you are here. Whenever I move the shir, I wonder whether it'll be me, myself, and I. I know at least I'll have the camera. So at least I'll have that chavrusa. So I'm grateful to you for being here. I want to thank, as always, our generous Parsha series sponsors, Becky and Avi Katz, our dear friends, and their family, in memory of Becky's father, David Grossman. Our learning should be Le'ili Nishmas, Dava B'Menachem Manish. Also, the series is generously sponsored by the Dyckman family, in memory of their daughter and sister, Daniela Racha Bas, Shalom Ezra, who left this world way too soon. Neshama should have a big aliyah through the incredible impact that she had in such a short time, and the learning we do in her memory. This afternoon, she is also sponsored anonymously in the merit of Avner Ben Avram, HaKohen Shetel Bas David, Rishulam Ben David, David Ben Rishulam Ben Nisra Ben Rishulam Ben Rafal Chaim Ben David, Ashraf Racha Bas Yosef Alevi, and the Neshama Zavaliya, and by Chana Ringel, Leila Nishmas Chaya Bas Yehoshua, Yisrael Yosef David Ben Harav Mordechai, and Yaakov Tzvi Ben Yaakov Zev Ben Hara. Thank you so much to our incredible, generous sponsors. We truly appreciate it. This week we have the privilege of reading and learning Parshas Baaloscha, page 774. We're now out of sync, unfortunately, with our brothers and sisters in Israel because we observed the second day of Shavuos 2 weeks ago. We read the Yontif Leining while they read Parshas Naso last week. So they already read Baaloscha and we're only reading it now. So I apologize to those who learn with us from there. They're getting ready for Parshas Baaloscha next year, or they're learning about what they read already yesterday. Page 774. Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Limor. Hashem spoke to Moshe. Daber Alan Ve'amarte Elav. And he spoke to Aaron and he said, Baaloscha es haneros el mul pnei haMenorah irushav haneros. When you kindle the lamps, when you light the menorah toward the face of the menorah, the seven candelabra. Vayas kein Aaron. And Aaron did exactly what was commanded. Al mul pnei haMenorah el haneroseh. He indeed lit the lamps as Hashem commanded. The menorah, the workmanship, the menorah was made, it was hammered out of one solid piece of gold. You remember all the way back from Parshas Truma that Hashem showed the miracle. When Moshe wasn't sure exactly how to make this menorah, Hashem said, just throw the block of gold in the fire and I'll take care of it for you. But first he showed him an image of what it would look like. And you remember the Sfas Emes we taught then, if Hashem was going to take care of it, why did he have to see an image? Because if we want to merit divine assistance and help in achieving a goal, we have to have a vision and a picture of what we want. If we don't have a vision and a picture of what we're trying to achieve, then there's no way and no how we'll get it done. What's going on at the beginning of this parsha? So Rashi famously quotes, Lama nismacha parshas ha-menorah parshas ha-nesiim. Why is our parsha beginning with the obligation Aaron and his descendants to climb those steps and to light that menorah? Why is it juxtaposed? Why is it the continuation of the end of yesterday's parsha, the end of last week? Parshas Naso ended with the Nesiim, the incredible, prolonged, redundant, seemingly superfluous, how the 12 leaders of the tribes brought the exact same carbon. And rather than efficiently say, ditto, times 12, list their names, all 12 did the same thing, Torah took a precious real estate and repeated it over and over and over again. And we spoke about several suggestions, why that was, what was the message or lesson of the Torah in doing so. But in any case, Aaron HaKohen, Rashi wants us to believe, Levik Shara Aaron Chanukah Sanesim Chol Shadaito. Aaron sees the leaders, the tribes, each of them have the privilege of coming and offering their carbon. And he says words that when our children say them, we silence them. When our kids say, it's not fair to me, how come they get to? How come you did that for them? How come you give them? How come I don't? What do we say? You get what you get, and you don't get upset. I mention this every year, and yet Hashem doesn't turn to Aaron and say, Aaron, bubble ketzela, Aaron, my tire a kinder, Aaron, you get what you get, and you don't get upset. He doesn't tell him, Aaron, be happy with what you have. What does he give him? Bialoscha saneros. He says, when you light the menorah, and don't worry, because theirs is not in perpetuity, but yours, you will continue to do so. The Ramban sees here an allusion to the miracle, the holiday of Hanukkah, that will continue to light, will continue to light that menorah. And it's a peculiar interaction, communication between Hashem and Aaron. We've spoken about this countless times. I always find it very, I don't know, reassuring, validating. I relate maybe. What Hashem is telling Aaron is, in the area of spirituality, competitiveness can be good. You see, if you're competitive because you're envious. You say, I don't want the other to have, I should have it instead, then it's a negative, destructive trait. But if you see something someone else has, you see the way they daven, the way they learn, the chesed they do, the tzedakah they give, and you say, I want that chance, I want that opportunity. Hashem, ask me, put me in the game, give me a shot, give me a chance, I want it too. Hashem says, that's welcome and that's wonderful. That's fantastic. Chazal, our rabbis teach us, they have a comment. They say, that kinah sofrim tar b'chochma, jealousy among scholars increases scholarship. When there's competitiveness and jealousy, when scholars are trying to learn and offer their novel interpretations and write their response to their tshuvas, and they're not competing because they're trying to one-up chas v'shalom, they're not trying to arrogantly be more impressive, or they're not trying to knock down their colleague or their friend, but simply they're driven by what the other's doing. Not instead of or in lieu of, but in addition to, they're driven by what they see in the other. Then Hashem welcomes that and says, it's wonderful. He says, that's fantastic. You want that too. And that's his response to Aaron. So Torah testifies, Vayas Kain Aaron, that Aaron did what he was commanded. Would you expect anything different? The great Aaron HaKohen, the first and great high priest, Moshe's older brother, would you expect anything different? So let's go back to the Menachem Tzion. We've been making our way through Rav Menachem Tzion Zaks, the new edition of Menachem Tzion. Rashi says, Lahagid Shvacha Shel Aaron Shaloshina. The fact that Vayaskein Aaron did what he was commanded speaks volumes. It's praise for Aaron that what? He didn't deviate. He didn't compromise. He didn't distort. He didn't do anything different than the way he was commanded. Says Menachem Tzion, Afsha Aaron Haya Oiv Shalom V'Rodev Shalom. Now, why is that impressive? Hashem said, this is the prescription. This is the formula. This is what you need to do. And Aaron did exactly as he was asked. And we're like, wow, that's so amazing. It's so amazing. That's what you'd expect. That's what's supposed to happen. Shiloshina, he didn't change. He didn't change. We've shared in the past other interpretations. Shiloshina is not that Aaron didn't change. He didn't distort. He didn't deviate what he was meant to do. Shiloshina, what didn't change? Not his actions from the command. Shiloshina, what didn't change is Aaron didn't change. Aaron didn't change. Here he's tapped by the Almighty to do this sacred holy work. Could have gone to his head. He could have grown arrogant. He could have, but he didn't. Shiloshina, the same Aaron from before he was prominent and well-known is the same Aaron now. He's center stage lighting the menorah. But that's not what the Menachem Tzion says. The Menachem Tzion Zak says, if anything, anyone, you might have suspected that Aaron would change. Why would you have suspected that Aaron would change? Because what's Aaron's defining characteristic or character trait? Oiv shalom v'rodev shalom. Aaron pursues peace, stands for peace, brings peace between people. Now, we know we have a principle, a very slippery slope, and very dangerous if deployed incorrectly. But we have a principle that's called Mishana Mipnei HaShalom. Sometimes, in certain circumstances, you are allowed to not be entirely precise or accurate if doing so is to preserve and maintain the peace. I'll give you an example. Never ever applies to me. Hypothetical, my neighbor. A woman turns to her husband and says, how do I look in this outfit? Mishana Mipnei HaShalom. It's a pikuach nefesh situation. It's a potentially life-threatening situation. So in that circumstance, he shouldn't necessarily be entirely honest. Now again, I say it's a very slippery slope and it's a very dangerous tool to know we have in our tool belt, but nevertheless, Chazal were adamant, and they elaborate, not for now, how and when and where and whom to deploy it. When are you Mishana Mipnei HaShalom? Let's say somebody asks you something, and they're not entitled to know that answer. The Gemara says there are three things that if somebody asks you, you're allowed to not be honest with them. One of them is about your learning. If somebody asks you, and you see this with many Gedolei Yisrael, how many times did you finish Shas? How many times did you make a Siyum on that? How many times? You don't have to be, if they're a nudnik, they're muttering you and petering you, they're not leaving you alone. And the only way you'll get them to leave you alone is you say some number. You're allowed to not be honest because you're being humble. It's not their business. They're not entitled to that answer. Somebody asks you about your net worth. Somebody asks you hospitality, about the quality of the meal, the food. There are all kinds. The Gemara Chazal say three things that if somebody is asking and pushing, and that's not information that they're entitled to, and the only way you'll get them to leave you alone is to give an answer that's not entirely accurate or precise, Mishanim epnei shalom. Dangerous. Dangerous. Slippery slope. But at times. So here, Aaron, the quintessential ish shalom. Aaron, the man who's known as the Oiv Shalom, Rodev Shalom. The man who loves peace and runs after peace. We might have thought, Hitir la'atzma l'shanos b'nidarche ha'shalom, that maybe Aaron will deviate from the command. Why? Just trying to keep the peace. So maybe Aaron's not going to light the menorah exactly the right way because he doesn't want to make anyone else feel bad. He doesn't want anyone to know he was commanded or he's center stage. Ulam ba'adlakas ha'niris ha'mesamelas ha'alos ha'torah lo hitir la'atzma l'shanos shini koshu hu lo viter ma'uma. But when it came to lighting the menorah represents Torah. Oruzu Torah, light is Torah. Torah illuminates the world, dispels the darkness. It is our navigation tool. Torah is light. It illuminates the world. So Aaron understood that Torah has to be precise. You cannot bend. You cannot deviate. You cannot compromise and you cannot corrupt Torah at all. At all. In fact, there's a famous Marshal, the Yamshal Shlomo, Shlomo Luria. The Gemara tells us, Tamaya Melach, he put 72 elders in 72 separate rooms, and he told them to record the Torah. And they each knew intuitively they had to censor parts of it that wouldn't exactly appeal to their oppressor. Some of the differences of the laws of a Jew and a non-Jew. And the 72 in 72 separate locations, all with divine assistance and inspiration, all recorded the exact same thing. And it was a miracle. Parenthetically, Rav Huttner says, you know what would have been a bigger miracle? If the 72 rabbis were in the same room and they all agreed on the same tradition, that would have been a bigger miracle, said Rav Huttner with his usual wit. That was Rav Huttner's quip. But Talmai HaMelech, elsewhere the Gemara tells us, in this halacha, Shur Shal Akum, the ox of a non-Jew that gores the ox of a Jew has a different law than the ox of a Jew and of a non-Jew. So even though it could have been life-threatening to the Jewish people to report the halacha the way it appears, they didn't distort, they didn't change it. Why not? It's pikuach nefesh. You can't misrepresent the halacha in order to save your life. And the Marshal, the Yamshal Shlomo, deduces from that Gemara that if a person were to compromise halacha, misrepresent halacha, convey or transmit the Torah imprecisely, that in fact is yarig ve'al yavor. You have to give up your life before you do it. Torah is so sacred, so precious, so pure, that it cannot be compromised or corrupted in iota, and that's what Aaron understands. Even though he's the Ish Shalom, and even though he's unwilling, he's usually Mishanim Ibnei HaShalom, he'll distort in order to preserve and protect the peace. Here, no. Yaakov sends to his brother, Im Lavan Garti, Rashi says, Tariq Mitzvah Shamarti, Lo Vitarti L'Lavan Aramoy V'Anucham U'ma Al'Eza Shum Yakronosai. I didn't compromise an iota. The best and the most impressive thing Yaakov can say and send to his brother is, tell my brother, I lived with that lowlife Lavan. I had every right. And believe me, there were many circumstances, says Yaakov, where I could have compromised, changed, distorted. It was warranted. It was reasonable, but I didn't. Because Lavan garti v'tayag mitzvos shamarti, and that's lahaget shvacho shal Aaron shaloshina, that even though Aaron, who ordinarily is loyal to the principle of shalom, of peace, even to the point that he's willing to sometimes twist it for shalom, he doesn't do it when it comes to representing and communicating Torah. There, he's completely accurate and precise. Parsha then goes on with the consecration of the Leviim, the holy Leviim and their great work. We're moving to Perek Ches, Pasuk Yud Tes. V'etnes ha'Leviim nesunul le'aron, levon mitob b'nei Yisrael, avarazov oruz b'nei Yisrael, v'lechapra b'nei Yisrael, v'lo yeh b'nei Yisrael negef, b'geshes b'nei Yisrael el ha'kodesh. Torah here tells us at the end of the consecration of Leviim, I assign the Leviim to be presented to Aaron and his sons from among the Jewish people to perform the service of the children of Israel in the Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting, and to provide atonement for the children of Israel so there will not be a plague among the children of Israel when they approach the sanctuary, the holy place. Lo yeh b'hem b'nei Yisrael negef, there won't be a plague when they approach. Writes the Menachem Tzion number 2. Yeshnam Yehudim anigashim al HaKodesh rak b'idan shal tzar v'tuga. When do people approach? When do Jews come to shul? When do they open their siddur or their tehillim? When do they, in earnest, lean in to a relationship with the Almighty, with the Ribono Shalom? Too many Jews, only when there's a crisis, when there's a catastrophe. There's no atheists in a foxhole. When they feel they're in trouble, when they need his help, that's when they reach out. Kasher negev ve'ason, poktim osam. When they feel a plague, a calamity, a plague, an illness, that's when they say, Hashem, I need you and I need you now. Ideally, we should approach, we should invest, we should lean in to our relationship with Hashem, not out of necessity and not in crisis and not just because we need Him and not from desperation, but it should be from joy and from inner peace and from happiness and from gratitude. What do we sing on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? The pasuk from Yeshaya. The prerequisite to Hashem wanting to dwell among us, remember we saw this, that's why it's called the Oel Moed. Because Hashem only comes into that tent when you make it a Moed, a dance party, a happy place. It's a Moed, it's a Yontif. When is Hashem in our homes? When they're happy places. When it's a happy place, when we bring joy and we bring light. When is it based filasi? When is it God's house of prayer? When is visimachtem? When it's a place of joy. So it says the Menachem Tzion, writing like a Chassidish Rebbe, that maybe another layer of understanding this pasuk is, when don't only approach Negev. Don't come when there's a plague. Don't come when there's a crisis. Don't come out of desperation. Don't only find your way to shul because now you need Him. But a person should come to Hashem out of a place of joy, happiness, wholeness, out of a place of gratitude, out of a place of faith. If you're watching and you say, wow, BRS really leaned in on the lighting for Goldberg Shiurim. There must be a whole crew. They paid a whole lighting company. Know that we are shortly before Mincha and the sun, Baruch Hashem, is provided. Hashem is the lighting crew. Thank you for the wink and the hug, Hashem. Maybe we should do the shiur at this time always. It's incredible lighting, if I must say so myself. I like the lighting. I like the lighting. Thank you, Hashem. Pasuk Tes, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Moving Perek Tes, Pasuk Gimel. Torah then goes on and tells us about the apprenticeship and responsibility. Here we have different ages of the Levium. Not 30 to 50, but from 5 to 20. What happened to the previous age we had in last week's Parsha? So Chazal understand that if a person takes a job, if a person takes an assignment, and we don't find success after a certain amount of time, move on. Move on. Someone who's not shown indication of success after 5 years has a slim chance of attaining a goal, Rashi says. The difference in the age of last week's parsha, this is to tell us how long to give something. If after 5 years you've not broken through, pivot. It's time to pivot to something else. Perek Tes, we come to the Pesach offering in the wilderness. Here, Perek Tes, we get to Pesach Sheni. Here we have Pesach in the Midbar, but there were those who were ineligible. They couldn't participate. Those who were ineligible, and they couldn't participate. And why couldn't they participate? They were tami nefesh. They were impure, or they were derech rechoka. They're far away, and they come to Moshe, and they challenge him. And they say, the people who were impure, and they made contact with a corpse. So they were ineligible to bring the Pesach offering. They came on that day, and they approached Moshe and Aaron. And they say those iconic words, or what should be iconic words. We are impure. To whom were they impure? Who did they have contact with? Who were they carrying? They became impure. The Gemara records several possibilities. One, Nadav Aviyu, Aaron's sons who died. Another, the bones of Yosef that they carried out of Mitzrayim, and they promised Yosef they would bury him in the promised land. Or maybe it was a Meis Mitzvah, somebody who died with no relative and nobody to take responsibility. The Gemara records several possibilities. And they come and they challenge Moshe and Aaron. Lama nigara levolti akrivis korban Hashem v'adu b'soch ben Yisrael. What do those words mean? Lama nigara? Why should we be nigara? Bal Tosef and Bal Tigra. What does nigara mean? Diminished, missing, lacking, incomplete. In other words, very similar to what Aaron said to begin the parsha. Aaron follows the sacrifices of the Nesiyim and he says, not fair to me. Why don't I get a chance? And now these impure individuals say, everyone else is participating in a collective communal experience of a Korban Pesach. They're reliving Mitzrayim, freedom, emancipation. And what about us? Lama nigara. It's not fair. It's not fair to us. What about us? Lama nigara. And Moshe says, Ich weiß nicht. Mistama Moshe spoke Yiddish. He said, I don't know. I don't know the halacha. Vayomer alein, Moshe, imdu v'ashmo ma'itzav Hashem lachem. Stay here. Don't go anywhere. Have a snack. Make a coffee. I'll be right back. I got to check with Hashem. And Hashem comes to Moshe and he says, that ish ki atame l'nefesh b'derech rechoka, if somebody's impure or they're a far distance and they can't make it in time to participate, no problem. The next month, there's going to be, on the 15th of the month, something called Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni. I've talked to you in the past. I'm not going to repeat the whole halacha, but it's a very beautiful idea that they were carrying the bones of Yosef. Pesach Sheni is the holiday of second chances. Second chances. Things don't always work out the first time. They don't always work out the first chance. Sheryl Sandberg wrote a great book when her husband suddenly passed away, unexpectedly, while working out in a gym, on a treadmill, called Option B. Pesach Sheni is the yontiv of Option B. When Option A has been taken away from us, there is an Option B. And who is the one who most stands for and gave a second chance? None other than Yosef HaTzadik. When Yosef is reunited with his brothers, rather than seek or take revenge on them, what does he give them? A second chance. So in the merit of carrying the bones of Yosef, in the merit of being contaminated to the bones of Yosef, in the merit of the one, the paradigm, the model of second chances, Hashem says, I'll give you a holiday of second chances. But it's not just a holiday of second chances. By the way, there was a Pesach Sheni when Buchenwald was liberated. Rabbi Herschel Schachter, Rabbi J.J. Schachter's father, blessed memory, chaplain who helped liberate the camp, they held the Pesach Sheni. They ki'ilu had, not literally the offering of a korban Pesach, but a recreation of a Pesach Sheni. Those survivors gave God a second chance, a Pesach Sheni. Yosef gave his brothers a second chance. And Hashem gave our people a second chance because they asked for it. And that's really the part of the story that's so powerful. This mentality and this attitude that almost no one would ever have. Could you imagine today a group of Jews who for whatever reason are exempt from Pesach? Could you imagine they're coming to the rabbi and saying, Rabbi, one second. It's not fair to me. I want to clean. It's not fair to me. I want to spend $100 a pound on hand matzah. It's not fair to me. I want to have to take out a home equity loan to afford this holiday. It's not fair to me. I want to turn over my whole kitchen in my own house. Could you imagine today a group would say, it's not fair to me. I want to participate. And that's exactly what they did. Lama nigara. Rashi says, Amar lehem ein kachin krevim betumah. Sprinkle us, purify us, put us back in the game, coach. This law of Pesach Sheni really should have been taught, initiated by whom? The great Moshe Rabbeinu. He should have had the merit to be the author of this law. And yet Rashi says, Megaglin's Chusayde Zakai. It wasn't initiated or taught by Moshe. It was initiated and it's credited to whom? To the people who stepped up and said, Lama Nigara. Why? Because those are outstanding words. And says the Ishtamid, says Rav Yisrael Meir Druk, and the Ishtamid. Yeshla Ayin, Mawad Gashakan Amar Lahem Imdu Ve'eshma, Ketamana Muftach Lashmum De Rabo. What did Moshe mean when he said, make a coffee, have a cookie, I'll be back in a minute, like a student sitting, listening from their teacher. Moshe says, I'm confident I'm going to go to God and I'm going to come back with a good answer. So wait, relax, have a seat, I'll be right back. Why here? Why right now? We don't find elsewhere that Moshe carries that confidence that he's going to go to Hashem and he's going to come back with an answer. We don't see elsewhere that Moshe has that confidence he's going to initiate, Hashem's going to respond. So why Davki here? Why now? Says Rav Druk, to say, Yisod Godom, Desha'at, Kan Haisa She'elasam Lama Nigara, Levilti Yikrivas Korban Hashem, Shekosh She'elasam Bakashos Ma'ilakai Mitzvah Hashem, Ulerotz Lahafsid HaMitzvah, Umeachah Shekoritzonam Ha'ilizchus LaMitzvah, Komi Shebelof Ne'akash Baruch Bebakasha Aruchnias, Muftach Lo She'Hashem Yisborach Yana Oso. If you want to be answered by Hashem, then don't ask or don't only ask for material physical things. We've been learning this for the last several months in living with Emunah. which by the way, this week is tomorrow morning, for the same reason of travel for the Simcha. But in Living with Emunah, we were learning Rav David Abuchatzera's Sefer, Shari Tefillah, not a Sefer on Emunah, Bitachon, a different Sefer called Shari Tefillah. And there he talks about, we sometimes think davening is designated for physical things. Hashem make me healthy, Hashem make my stocks do well, Hashem help me get the job, the house, the car, the portfolio, Hashem help my knees and my hips and my joints all work. And we think that's tefillah. But he introduces the idea that we should also daven, that we daven well, and daven that we learn well, and daven that we have Yirah Shemayim, that we have knowledge and fear and faith in Hashem. Daven for Ruchnias, not only for Gashmias, because when we daven for Ruchnias, Hashem never turns us away empty-handed. And in fact, I don't want to repeat everything we say there, but he urges us, couch even your prayer for physical in spiritual. So you could ask Hashem, Hashem, help me do well with my money because you want more retail therapy. You want to go to the mall and shop. Or you could say, Hashem, I have a mission, I have a purpose, that I'm here for a reason to serve you, but I can't do it if I don't have an expense account. If I'm worried about how I'm going to pay my bills, I can't serve you. So let my request, even for money, be a spiritual request. I can only be my best as an Eved Hashem if I have what I need to fulfill my mission to serve you. So says Rav Druk, here, we didn't see this elsewhere. Here Moshe says, wait, I'm confident I'm going to get an answer. And why was Moshe so confident he could initiate this conversation with Hashem? Why? You know why? Because it was for Ruchnias. These people said, not Lama Nigara, it's not fair to us, we don't get to eat the great roast on Pesach. Not fair to us, we're not getting the great corned beef on Pesach. Not fair to us, we're not getting the Pesach Hotel with the midnight barbecue buffet and the endless quinoa sushi station and the tea room. It's not what they came and said, it's not fair to us, we don't get to go to a Pesach program. What they said is, Lama Nigara, why should we be deprived a holy and a sacred and a spiritual experience? And when a person craves and yearns, and when a person desperately refuses to be deprived of a spiritual experience, that Hashem never turns away empty-handed. And that's why Moshe was confident Hashem would answer. Back to the Menachem Tzion. Perek Tes Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Moving right along. Now we have the divine signs. They're traveling through the desert. When do you stay? When do you go? When do you settle? And when are you on the move? When do you unpack? And when is the time to get going? Torah tells us, Perek Tes Pasuk Chaf Gimel, top of page 782. Api Hashem Yachanu, the Api Hashem Yisau. Es Meshmeres Hashem Shamaru, Api Hashem Biyad Moshe. According to the word of Hashem, you encamp. According to the word of Hashem, you travel. Safeguard according to the word of Hashem through Moshe. And that's true even today. We have to know. Our journey, our going and our coming, our travel and it's all from above. This is the source of embrace your place. This is the source. Api Hashem Yachanu ve'api Hashem Yisau. You are where you're meant to be. It's all Api Hashem. Hashem wants your flight to be on time, it'll be on time. He wants you to be delayed or canceled, Hashem wants you to go or travel, Hashem wants you to stay still and stay put. Api Hashem Yachanu ve'api Hashem Yisau. Embrace your place because you are where you're meant to be. And that's not a newfangled New Age idea Goldberg has ordinarily Wednesday mornings to make people feel good, the opium of the masses. No, it goes back to the Torah, it goes back to this pasuk. Our goings and our comings, our settling down and our travel. The whole way it works, wherever we're trying to go, we should take our initiative, make our effort, and at the end, the result and the outcome are not up to us, they're up to Hashem, and no, it's all from above. Says the Menachem Tzion. This is not only true then. It should have said, Api Hashem Chanu, the Api Hashem Nasu, Belashon Avar. If the Torah here is describing the way they journeyed and traveled then, it should have said it in past tense, but it doesn't. What does it say? Kasav Zehu Eifo Tzav Ladoros, Shevachom Makon Shevnei Yisrael Yunimtzoim Ben Dodeyem Harabim, Hina Mitzuvim Beomdim Shekol Achaneos Vachom Masos Shlama Yid Mudrachim, Api Hashem Biyad Moshe. We need to know in the future tense, Api Hashem Yachanu, Api Hashem Yisau. Wherever we go, wherever we travel, from Spain to France, Germany, expelled from there to here, we spoke on Shavuos from Chaim Volozhiner, the promise the 10th and final Golos would be in America, to Eretz Yisrael, the miracle of the modern state of Israel, and the miracle of the sprouting of redemption in our time. All these journeys, all these opportunities, all these goings and all these comings, it's all from above. That's Zos HaTorah Shesam Moshe L'Vnei Bnei Yisrael. When we lift the Torah during Hagbah, we call out, Zos HaTorah, this is the Torah that Moshe gave to the Jewish people. But we add on something. What do we add? Zos HaTorah Shesam Moshe L'Vnei Bnei Yisrael. How do we end it? Even though it's not really there, that's not the end of the sentence, we add the addendum. What do we add on? Api Hashem B'Yad Moshe. Lahara says, Chazus HaTorah L'Rabim. Lahafkin Shazos HaTorah L'Ote Mechlefes. Shekol HaTorah Metzuy Ata B'Yadenu. And Asun L'Moshe Rabbeinu B'Yad Hashem. This is the same Torah. Its message is the same message. It has been with us for 3,300 years. It is our North Star, our guiding light, our compass that tells us where to go. It is our ways. Is it our Google Maps? It tells us when we travel. It tells us when we stop. It tells us to know we are where I'm meant to be. There are no coincidences. A Jew is never stuck. If we're there, it's for a mission. It's for a purpose. It's for a reason. V'chol chanaya v'chol masa. Every time we park ourselves and every time we move. Also, lanu linur achrei atoros achadoshos. Don't think where we go and where we travel, those new age, newfangled ideas, we are meant to adopt them. No. Api Hashem. It's all with the Torah. Api Hashem biyad Moshe. The Torah comes, it travels with us, and it illuminates, and it directs us wherever we go. Not only then, in past tense, doesn't say Asher Chanu, Api Hashem Nas'u, it says Yachanu, and Yisou. Because we need to know in our lives today as it was then, we have to embrace our place and know we are where we're meant to be. It's all from Hashem, it's all from above. And then the Torah tells us, how do we know when we go and where we go? Perek Yud Pasuk Beis. Make two trumpets. And blow on them. That's how we'll know when to go. Make two trumpets and you'll know. Says Menachem Tzion. All the utensils Moshe made in the desert were valid, were kosher, both through the journeys in the desert and also once we entered and settled in Israel, with an exception. What's the exception? The chatzotzros, these trumpets. Ksheros lo, psulos ledoros. Why? The aron, the shulchan, the menorah, all of that was valid in the desert and valid when we entered Israel. But these trumpets that were blown to gather, collect the people, to tell us when to travel, they were kosher for Moshe in the desert. Psulos ledoros, no good, invalid. Settle them, retire them once you enter the land. My time at Domakra, I say lecha 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 trei zimnei, say lecha v'ayu lecha lecha v'lo ledoros. Gemara Menachos Chavches has a limud from the word lecha. These trumpets are for you, Moshe. Don't take them with you. Why? Listen to this incredible insight. Beautiful, beautiful insight. 8. Parsha perspective for today. He says, I'll tell it to you outside. These trumpets are the communication, the mechanism that Moshe calls and gathers the people and tells them where to journey, when to journey, when it's time to go. Says Menachem Tzion, every generation needs to be communicated to them in their own way. This wasn't Kashel Adoros. You need to know, Ba'asher Husham, where is this generation? And how do they need to be spoken? And how do they need to be called? Behind the Bima, over the last several months, we've had a series of different interviews, fascinating, from Rav Kalish and Rav Moshe Dan Kestenbaum, sort of represent one attitude towards talking to the youth of today. And we had my friend Rav Chaim Tzvi Center, and then we've had Rav Gav, and we had Rav Nissen Kaplan. And I think this week, Tuesday, our interview with Rav Yossi Ben Shushan is coming up. Very fascinating, different perspectives on how to connect and speak to this generation. And I, maybe like many of you, are tempted to say, like, we weren't spoken to like that. Nobody talked to us like that. Like, toughen up. What do you mean you need to be validated and seen and heard and all these words? No one cared to hear us or see us or validate us. I mean, you did, of course, mom and dad. But that wasn't part of the educational model. There were expectations. So what you needed to do. This is what you had to get done. So you had to be. So you had to show up. Get it done. Well, what is this participation trophy? Every kid's a valedictorian of the class. Everybody needs to be seen and heard and loved and coddled. And what's going on over here? And it's a fascinating debate, and I'm not weighing in right now. You should listen to all those interviews because they're all by really great educators who offer very different perspectives, and they're really worthwhile. But says the Rav Menachem Metzion Zaks, the Chatzotzros are not Kashel Adoros. You know why? Every generation, you need to speak to people the way that they will listen. So the trumpets that worked for Moshe in the desert don't work for the Jewish people in the land of Israel. And the way that they communicated, maybe in Eastern Europe, is not true for America. America might be different than Israel, and Borough Park might be different than Boca, and every place is different. You have to know in every generation. When I was one of the early people using the internet, social media, never to put a picture of the dessert I just ate or my kids their first day of school or anything about myself, but to teach and preach Torah and try to reach people where they are, I was criticized early on, and now the whole world, including Agudas Yisrael of America, have a Twitter handle, Big Rabbanim are posting their Torah and reaching people. Basher Hashem, those are the Chatzotzers of today. Not everyone, I'm not encouraging. If you're not on, don't go on. As Ben Shapiro said here on Shavuos, if he could press the hard reset and never have it be invented, he would eliminate it right now. It causes more harm than good. So I'm not encouraging you to go on if you're not on, but know that there is a world and a generation, that's where they are. And those are our trumpets, that's how we reach them. So even though the other utensils were kosher in the Midbar and kosher ledoros, these trumpets, the chatzotzros, they're kosher lo psilos ledoros. They're kosher for him then, but they're no good for generations, because every generation, we need to learn the language, the vocabulary, the sprach. We need to learn where they are and how to reach them. We need to learn how to communicate in a way that they'll hear, because our goal is to transmit the beauty. Our goal is to transmit the energy, the passion. So to talk to a wall, to preach in a way nobody's going to hear, defeats the purpose. We have to craft our own chatzotzros for each time and for each generation. Perek Yud Pasuk Chavtes. Turn the page 784. Moving right along. We have a very enigmatic conversation between Moshe and his father-in-law. You remember Moshe's father-in-law, Yisro? We had a whole parsha name for him in Shmos. Yisro. What did he hear? Gemara Tzvachim has a debate. Had he heard about the splitting of the sea or the giving of the Torah? Or did he hear the miracles of Egypt? Whatever it is he heard, he decided to come and join our people. And now he's ready to leave. And he gives the unsolicited advice to Moshe, you need to delegate. Or EOS would say, delegate and elevate. And Moshe heeds the warning and is a much more effective leader because he delegates. And now Yisro is ready to go home. Moshe, he talks to his father-in-law Shver, who has many names, one Chovav. It's time to go. We're heading to the promised land. Shver, come with us. Come. Come with us, and we'll do good for you. We'll treat you well, because Hashem's been good to us. And Yisro says, thanks, my son-in-law, but no thanks. I'm going home. Going to my land, I'm going to my people. I'm blown away, I'm impressed, I've transformed my life. I'm taking what I've seen, I had my impact, I'm going home. Vayomer al natazov, Moshe pleads with them, al natazov, son, don't go. Aken yadata chanusen b'minbar v'yisalani l'inayim, you are our eyes. You're our eyes, you enable us to be able to see. Vaya kiseylech imanu, vaya tova v'asher iti v'ashem imanu v'itav nulach. And if we go, you'll be our eyes, we'll be able to navigate, we'll be able to see. We'll be able to see. What is this strange conversation? And how does it end? They depart 3 days. Very abrupt. No closure. Did Moshe persuade his father-in-law or not? Does Yisro stay or does Yisro go? Torah never tells us. Torah never tells us. So machlokes achronim, the Rishonim rather, the commentators on this pasuk have a debate. Did he convince him? Did he not convince him? Did he stay or did he go? The Ish Tamid Rav Druk has an insight. Rav Druk says, what did he mean when he said, you'll be our eyes? You'll be our eyes. V'ha'isa lanu le'einayim, you'll be our eyes. So Das Akena Mibalei HaTosfos says, Aken yadata chanuseinu b'amidbar perish, Aken ani machla panecha sh'telich imanu sh'yadata chanuseinu b'anisem. You know where we've encamped, you know the miracles, you know the might that Hashem has shown. V'ha'isa lanu le'einayim sh'harom oscha imanu. When others see you are with us, Yomru, they'll say, Lo azav artzo ve'asnachal asom, lo b'nei sh'ra v'yadu g'dol sh'al kosh baruch. When people say, Yisro, do you know who he is? Yisro, the greatest influencer of his time. He's got millions of followers offline and online. Yisro is the high priest of Midian. Yisro is this aristocracy, this royalty, this wealthy success story. He's some combination of, I don't know, a preacher with Elon Musk, with some person all wrapped into one, and says, the Das Kenan Bala Tosos, what Moshe was telling Yisro is, when the world knows that you joined us and you put your lot in life with us, they'll know it's only for one reason, because you saw the light, because you discovered the truth, because you embraced Hashem. So what validation could you have more than Yisro forfeiting and abandoning everything he knew and had to join now the Jewish people? And you know what a confirmation, what an affirmation that would be? You know what an endorsement that would be for the Jewish people that we are Hashem's children? So why the words Vayisa lanu le'enayim? In what way would Yisro be for them their eyes? Why that language? Why that metaphor? It doesn't sound like it's for others. It sounds like it's for the Jewish people. And if the main point is that the other nations see that Yisro joined, it should have said, you'll be for them the other nations of the world. You'll be for them their eyes. What do you mean, lanu? Says Rav Druk, v'yesh levar shekavanos Moshe Yisro yishamesh kidugma avurenu. It won't only be an image for others. It'll be for the Jewish people themselves. You see, there's a fundamental difference between Yisro and the rest of the people. Yisro is what other denominations call. We call them converts. Other denominations call them a Jew by choice. Those who were born to a Jewish mother were born into their Judaism. Can't escape. Can't transfer out. Can't drop that class. You're in for life. If you have a mother, Jewish mother, you're Jewish and you're in for life. But Yisro was not born Jewish. Nevertheless, he chooses it. You know what a powerful influence and inspiration it is? Do you know what it means for the people to know? The Gemara says, Kashan Gerin Yisrael Kesapachas. Converts are as painful to Jewish people like a bloody boil. Sorry for the image. Really? Why would we say such a denigrating thing about converts? So some interpret it negatively. Converts, some of them are inauthentic. Some of them do it not for the most right or righteous reasons. They have ulterior motives. Question their motive. But Tosfos quotes the name of righteous converts. You know what the Chazal meant? Kashan Yisrael, Kashan Gerin Yisrael Kesapachas. What it meant is that converts are our conscience. That which we sometimes are lukewarm about and disaffected by, the converts, gung-ho, Shabbos is amazing. Kashrus, Pesach, the cost of matzah, it's amazing. The Seder, I love it. I want a third one. It's all amazing. Jewish education, I pay double for my kids. It's amazing. It's amazing. And that can be an indictment on the Jewish people. They're the mirror for those who were born who are Jewish by birth. And that's what it's expanded out, not only true about converts, true about Balei Tshuva. Balei Tshuva is so enthusiastic. Those who change their life, those who adopt a more observant life and lifestyle, their enthusiasm becomes for those who were born into it, like, okay, relax, it's not so great. Maybe I should be doing it more. Fine. There's a whole old routine. I wonder if you could find it online. One of the early dinners honoring NJAP and Rabbi Effie Buchwald and his incredible program, explanatory service. There was someone from the West Side who did a whole routine about what it's like. Anyone ever see it? I'm going to try to find it and put it in our Parsha WhatsApp group. About what it's like when Rabbi Buchwald would send you home from shul with one of the people in his program and you took him for dinner. All you wanted to have was a quick Friday night meal and go to sleep. And they're so enthusiastic. And don't you want to have a Dvar Torah? And don't you have questions and answers on the Parsha? And can't we sing more Zmiros? It's a whole routine about it. So Yisro played that role to Moshe for the Jewish people. Moshe says, the rest of us, we were born into this. We were a nation born into Mitzrayim. We stood at the mountain at Sinai. And then you came and you joined us. You opted in. And in a world in which so many want to opt out, you opted in. And we can't lose you. We need that. We need that impression that you make. We need that impact that you have. Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Gimel. Skip right along. Now we have this unfortunate interaction. Miriam and Aaron, gossip. It's not gossip in the negative sense, but they're speaking about their brother. Odos ha'isha kushis asher lakach ki isha kushis lakach. They're speaking about Moshe's wife, Tzipora. He married a Cushite woman. And they said, commenting on how Moshe had withdrawn, he wasn't having intimacy with his wife in order to qualify to initiate prophecy with Hashem whenever he wanted, he needed to carry himself in such a way that he never experienced intimacy with his wife. And they're speaking. What, is he the only one who God speaks to? He's the only prophet in our family? It's a family business. Aaron, you're a prophet. Miriam says, I'm a prophetess. And Moshe, who does he think he is? Is he different? What about our poor sister-in-law, Tzipora? Moshe's not with her. What's going on? And God himself interjects. Vayishma Hashem, he hears. Vayish Moshe anav ma'od, mikol adam asher pnei adama. And Hashem interjects and he defends Moshe's honor. And he testifies. He says, Moshe is the most humble man of all time. Moshe is the most humble person of all time. What does this mean? I want to spend our last few minutes on this pasuk. Moshe is the most humble man of all time. Says the Menachem Tzion, HaTorah sif el Hashem Moshe el amila v'ha'ish. Interestingly, the pasuk, God's testimony, God could have said, we're in Perek Yud Bey's pasuk Gimel, the middle of page 794. Hashem could have said, Moshe anav ma'od. Moshe is the most humble man. Mikol Adam, from any person, al pnei adama, on the face of the earth. What is that word, the word at the opening of that sentence, of that pasuk? V'ha'ish Moshe anav ma'od. And the man, Moshe, was very humble. What does the word v'ha'ish add? I want to share with you several interpretations really quickly. This is the only one I saw that asked this question. What does the word v'ha'ish add? Because you know what the word ish means? Man. You're the man. Be the man. Man up. In a place where there's no man, be the man. That word ish means to be someone, to know who you are, to stand tall and proud, to make your contribution, to be on a mission. Now you might have said, Moshe's an anav mikol adam. You know what humility looks like? A frail, quiet, humble, disappearing, hiding in the corner, wallflower, soft-spoken, passive, deferential. The Torah comes and says, Moshe is an anav, but not because he failed to be an ish. First, he's an ish. V'ha'ish, Moshe. Moshe is an ish. He's a gavri. He's a man. He mans up. He knows who he is and what he's about and what gifts he's got from God and his talents and his skills and his obligations and responsibilities. And then his anivus is built on that. Shel anav yodea levatos atzmo kol tzer menachnu ma. Hu anav rak bedvarim gashmi admayim. Mikol adam asher pnei adama. When it comes to the physical, he's an anav. Mikol adam on the adama. Physically, he doesn't have any needs. He doesn't need money. Doesn't need stature. Doesn't need prominence. Doesn't need fame. Doesn't need fortune. From all the issues al pnei ha'adama that are adama, all the earthly issues, he's humble, he doesn't need. But when it comes to the spiritual, v'ha'ish, he's the man. And that, says the Menachem Tzion, is the balance that we need to find. Humility doesn't mean thinking less of ourselves. It means thinking of ourselves less often. Humility is not thinking less of ourselves. We have no right. If Hashem gave us potential and possibility and talent and skills, and we're meant to be on a mission and make a difference, how dare we think less of ourselves? How dare we think less of who Hashem created? Humility is not thinking less of ourselves, it's thinking of ourselves less often. When it came to the Adama, the earthly things, Moshe says, I don't need, I don't want, humble. But when it comes to the spiritual, who he is and his leadership, then he is Ha'ish, he is the man. He's the man. And that's the balance between the two. That's what's going on in this pasuk when Hashem testifies on Moshe's behalf about who he is. Azai zokt the Menachem Tzion. Rabbi Sachs, Rabbi Lord Sachs in his Chumash, he says the following, fascinating. Ve'ish Moshe anav, the man Moshe was humble. This is a navam in history. I'm going to guess the word navam means this is new. The idea that a leader's highest virtue is humility must have seemed absurd, almost self-contradictory in the ancient world. Leaders were proud, magnificent, distinguished by their dress, appearance, and regal manner. They built temples in their own honor. They had triumphant inscriptions engraved for posterity. Their role was not to serve, but to be served. Everyone else was expected to be humble, not they. Humility and majesty could not coexist. I went to the UAE earlier this year. everything in the UAE. First of all, every almost building you walk into has three portraits, each life size, of the founder and the current leader of the country. Literally every building you walk into, three enormous portraits. Every institution, every entity, every university, every hospital is named for the founder, for the leader of the country. In antiquity, humility was absurd with leadership. Everyone else was expected to be humble. Humility and majesty couldn't coexist. If you wanted to be royalty and majesty, if you wanted to show power, then there was no room for humility. But in Yiddishkeit, writes Rabbi Sachs, this entire configuration is overturned. Leaders were to serve, not be served. Moshe's highest accolade was to be called Eved Hashem. The architectural symbolism of the two great empires of the ancient world, the Mesopotamian Tower of Bavel and the pyramids of Egypt, visually represent a hierarchical society broad at the base and narrow at the top. The Jewish symbol, the menorah, is the opposite. Broad at the top, narrow at the base. As if to say that in Judaism, the leader serves the people, not vice versa. Moshe's first response to Hashem's call to the burning bush was humility. Who am I? It was precisely this humility that qualified him to lead. Humility is not what it's sometimes taken to be, a low estimate of oneself. True humility is mindlessness of self. An anav is one who never thinks about himself because he has more important things to think about. I once heard someone say, said Rabbi Sachs, about a religious leader, he took God so seriously he didn't need to take himself seriously at all. That is biblical humility. Humility is not self-abasement. It's not self-anything. It's the ability to stand in silent awe in the presence of otherness. The thou of God, the otherness of other people, the majesty of creation, the beauty of the world, power of great ideas, the call of great ideals. Humility is the silence of the self in the presence of that which is greater than the self. Humility, true humility, is one of the most expansive and life-enhancing of all virtues. It does not mean undervaluing yourself, it means valuing other people. It signals an openness to life's grandeur, the willingness to be surprised, uplifted by goodness wherever you find it. So that is in contrast to the way antiquity and in other societies, civilizations, even today, we won't reference which narcissist leaders of countries can't have a press conference without talking all about themselves and what they've done and their successes and what winnings they've had and all their achievements. But that's not the Jewish way. That's not the Jewish way. The greatness is in the humility, says Rabbi Sachs, and that is Moshe's humility. That's what Hashem is testifying to in response to Miriam. The great Kotzker, the Heliga Kotzker, as he always does succinctly, Ve'ish Moshe Anav Ma'od in his Emes Ve'emuna, Pamachas Amar L'chaser Echad, Em Hashem Yisborach Hayamara Lo, Ad Kam Atam Maguna, Lo Haisa L'cha Efsharus, L'skayim. If Hashem showed you how repulsive and pathetic you are, you would never be able to live, endure. Ulametza Moshe Rabbeinu Ksiv, Ve'ish Moshe Anav Ma'od, Rashi says, Shafel V'savlan, She'as Sovel Es HaShiflus. He was able to endure the lowliness. Hashem was able to tell Moshe the way it is, and Moshe was able to take it. And that's Moshe's humility. That's the Kusker's understanding. Shafel v'savlan, lowly, and savlan means patient. He was patient with God when he'd say to God, can I have another? When Hashem gave him a shtickle musar, and Hashem occasionally had to tell Moshe to set him right, his humility was he was able to take it and grew from it. Ravolba has yet another interpretation. What does it mean, Ha'ish Moshe Anav Ma'od? What is this humility? Rashi says, Anav means, as we just said, he is Shafel V'Savlan. What is the word Savlan? Go to Israel and say, what does this mean? Savlanut. Savlanut. What does Savlanut mean? Patience. The Altar of Kelm says, you know what humility is? It's the capacity to display patience. Tolerance. What is patience? Tolerance. What's tolerance? When you're patient on a line, you could tolerate being on the line. When you're patient while the Wi-Fi is coming back, then you're tolerating that you have no Wi-Fi. Patience is tolerance. Savlanut is tolerance, to be sovel. The root of the word savlanut is to be sovel. I can tolerate that which is demanding my patience. So Rav Volba, building on the Altar of Kelm, says, in addition to the tolerance a person has to show towards others, person has to be tolerant of himself. Person has to be tolerant of ourselves. Not only a virtue, once we realize that we've not accomplished all that we planned, it's a midah. It's a midah. The anivus is savlanus, is the capacity to be patient and tolerant even with ourselves. Rav Druk has another interpretation. Number 3 or 4 we're up to. Of what does it mean, anav? What was the praise? What was Hashem endorsing that Moshe is humble? We don't have time. I'll tell you one more. Rav Chatzko Weinfeld, one of my Rebbeim. Moshe Rabbeinu was a man on a mission. He was focused on his responsibilities and his goals. He was completely removed from personal interests. It wasn't about himself, his name, his fame, his fortune. It was all the Shema. It was all for the Jewish people. When it came to Klal Yisrael complaining about the food, it was a complaint against Hashem and reflected poorly on his people. Rav Weinfeld is answering a contradiction in our parsha. On the one hand, Hashem says about Moshe, he's the most humble man, and that humility is defined by that patience, that ability to be tolerant. And yet, when they complain about the food, Moshe goes off. And he says, I can't take them anymore. Kill me. I beg you and let me not have to deal with them anymore. I'm done. Rav Weinfeld's bothered. What happened to the man who's so humble and so patient and so tolerant? Why all of a sudden with this complaint does he come to Hashem and say, take me out of the picture? So Rav Weinfeld says, when it comes to himself, he's a man on a mission. He's focused. When it came to his, here what's happening, Klal Yisrael complaining about the food, to whom is that complaint directed? To Hashem. And that reflects poorly on his people, and his entire mission is to transform them, change them, redeem them, repair them. And that's why he reacts so harshly and strongly. When it comes to his sister and his brother talking about his personal life, he didn't care. It didn't faze him. He completely removed himself and his personal interests. He knew his siblings loved him and adored him, and in fact had saved him. And they had been through thick and thin together. So he didn't allow himself to get caught up in that which would be a distraction. He refused to compromise his core mission, what he was meant to do. He was anav, ma'od, shafel, v'savlan. He had patience, sufferance, he can endure, absorb. Why? Because he was on a mission. That's this mission in life. Save the outrage for where it belongs. When people who you know love you, maybe they made a mistake, save the outrage for where it belongs, not the people who love you. Moshe knew this was his brother and sister. They were through thick and thin. And it didn't bother him what they said or what they were doing. When Klal Yisrael complained, however, then Moshe has to turn them around. He turns them around because that's about Hashem. So when it comes to protecting Hashem, he finds his voice. When it comes to being spoken about himself, he keeps his eye on the ball. What matters most, he's a man on a mission, and he's not going to get derailed or distracted by the fact that they're talking about him, especially when he knows ultimately that they love him so. A lot more to talk about. Thank you for adjusting to a different day this week. We didn't even get to any Tiferes Shmuel, which I wanted to, but we always have it next year. Have a wonderful day and a week of Besoros Tovos, Yeshuas, V'Nechamos.